email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now I'm watching him here slugging a glass of water across the way from me. Many of you know him as Billy Murphy from The Young Offenders, but Shane Casey has taken on a new persona as the man who talks the statues. It's a new play he's written and he'll be performing it at the Civic Theatre next month as part of the Dublin Fringe Festival. You've had your water now, you're all good?
Yes, I'm good.
Thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
So good to finally meet you. I've passed you in Ballyvillane Shopping Centre once and I leave her alone.
Getting the shopping in.
She's gone into Dunce.
Probably weighed down with the bags.
The way out, you were on the way.
Oh, it's the rock star life that we have.
I was out in Glenville for a while, so that's where I used to go.
Very good. Yeah. Well, we're going to get to that because you're back in Cork City and you're haunting and you're loving it. But let's talk about the man who talks to statues. Give people a little bit of a flavour of the plot.
It is like the Ron Seal wood stain. It does exactly what it says on the tin. And our little sideline was, there's no problem talking to statues. It's when the statues start talking back. That's when we have a problem. So, it's about this chap in the play. Actually, it's a chap recording a radio play, which I know sounds very highfalutin and stuff. But it's basically about this fella called Daryl, who's on a Tinder date, on his way to Kanturk, and he flips the father's car. Mm-hmm. And instead of getting a bit of help, he ends up kind of essentially breaking into somebody's house and taking their car on a bit of a spin to Limerick. And that's where all the statues kind of come, because we have an abundance of statues around the country, as I'm sure you've seen, sporting figures,
absolutely,
historical figures. And Limerick has Richard Harris and Terry Wogan and a couple of others. So yeah, that's kind of where it starts, and it goes a bit mad after that then.
I was listening to it because, as you said, initially it was a radio play and now it's transitioned onto the stage, and I was listening to it on my way here, and I genuinely mean this when I say
you
have a way of captivating an audience. You brought me in.
Thank you.
I sat in the car because I was dying to know what happened next. As you said, the chaos of it was just brilliant. But there's lots of themes running through it as well. You know, some serious, some light, but you use humour in a brilliant way.
Yeah, I did a play a few years back called Wet Paint, and that was kind of about men being told that men don't talk about things, mm-hmm. which used to wreck my head. Because when you're on a building site for 8 hours or 12 hours a day painting, you can talk about everything. You talk about your family, your fear, mm-hmm. your worries. So that was a really good experience for me. And then I wanted to just bring it on to a different place, because somebody was saying, oh, you could do a Wet Paint sequel or do the play again. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do something that maybe have something a little bit richer to the subtext, but cover it up with humour and boyish bad behaviour, because everybody else is talking about it. Why can't a man talk about our behaviour in that way as well? But that sounds very heavy. It is funny,
It is. Yeah. I mean, there was laugh out loud moments for me in the car. There really was, just how, you know, but the correspondence with the girl as I said, you have a brilliant way of words. But what I love as well is that, you know, when you're listening to it and you're going along and you're hearing the characters develop. I was curious, knowing that I was going to be talking to you today, how do you develop a character like that? How do you just sit down and decide what it's going to sound like? Or does it evolve as it goes?
It does evolve as it goes. But I think it came initially from frustration, kind of like when you're not working, that it has to come out of you. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd like to think my strongest capacity is my imagination. My mother has a fantastic imagination as well. And I just come up with ideas and stories. And like, even when I was in Dublin here working, painting and decorating, the lads would almost see me talking to myself, that I'd be coming up with these little stories and these little puzzles and working it out. And really, I love acting, but I think writing is like putting the pieces together for me. It's like a puzzle that I know the rules to. And it's like yourself for sport.
Mm.
It's the work that they don't see, that's kind of what I love. If I get the chance to do it, it's you tipping away at the slitter and at the side of the house.
Yeah.
Nobody sees that, but that's what makes it richer and better. So it's from being a frustrated actor when I'm not working to writing stuff. And this is something I had the opportunity of making a radio play. I want to maybe write a book of it or a short story version of it and then bring it on as a television thing, because I think it would be a good episodic thing to have. Like, it could be a guy on the roof of Anfield talking to John Lennon.
Yeah.
I think it could be a guy smoking cigars with Winston Churchill, or God knows what.
Yeah.
It could go anywhere, but I just want to get this chapter done first and see where it takes it, because I think it is saying something and it is a bit of crack for an hour and a bit.
Oh, and it is. It's definitely crack. But I have to say, the fact that there is really relatable themes in there for everybody, you know, it's definitely one that I'm sure people are going to be really excited about. But you did mention, I suppose, men's mental health and, you know, talking about that.
Yeah.
Why was it important for you, I suppose, to weave that in here?
Being honest about it, I suppose it's like looking at things that were going on and addressing those things. Like,
okay.
There was a time where I was looking at, maybe not necessarily linked to this play, that there was a lot of men missing in Cork.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people that have gone missing and stuff like that. And, you know, car crashes as well, I suppose, that we'll have a weekend and we know it's coming, a long weekend, and we'll have issues with that. And then all this macho bravado around drink, which I think is nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, counting up, oh, he's a great man to have a pint, and bull, can we not get on over that? Like, you know, so I wanted to address that as well, like, because, well, not address that. It's not a, you know, I'd want to be beating people over the yeah, head.
But include
put those things in and yeah. go, yeah, we do kind of do that a little bit. Because when I did wet paint, and I suppose it was the most rewarding part of it, I was having a pint afterwards, and I was talking to a guy, and he said, you wrote my life. I goes, what?
Wow.
He said, I went down to Australia, and I said, I was down there, and I was doing this, this, and this. And then I came back, and this happened to me. And he said, that's what I, and I was like, I wanted to make plays for my dad and my mum and my buddies and the lads on the building site and all of that stuff. And I couldn't see it out there for them.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't see it. I found it was elitist and not for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm involved in the art.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going, where's my place? I need to find my place, because I could see, you see it in sport.
Yeah.
Everyone's cutting up the pie. I'd like my bit,
yeah.
You know, and I mean that in a respectful
way. Yeah, and you're including other people as well that mightn't always feel heard or seen or listened to.
Completely. So my way in was, I suppose I was in Limerick a few years ago and I was doing a play and I went, I saw Richard Harris' statue and I said, look, give me a sign I'm doing all right. And I ended up passing a church, St. Augustine's there in Limerick, and I'm not the best of religious people, and I went in and had a look around. They were blessing the throats, and I did my play that night, and I won Best Actor at the Unfringed Festival.
Wow.
So I was like,
there's your sign.
I think there's something there. And then this woman, Emily Fitzgibbon, who was from Graffiti Theatre Company, was very good to me and was encouraging my writing. I said, the man who talks to statues, and she went, oh, I think you're onto something there. So I'm a little like the cat at the back door presenting the dead bird to my one of my peers going, and what do you think, miss?
I have a question for you in a moment. Actually, I must get to it. But first, I am intrigued. Is there a bit of you in Daryl? You know, do you identify with Daryl in this play maybe more than, say, Billy Murphy in
The
Young Offenders?
My wife has definitely said there is a section in it where he's in a chemist and he's having a conversation with a pharmacist and he's not very nice.
He has he has a bit of a moment.
A bit of a moment.
Yeah, I heard that
we'll
part.
Say, and you're like, he's going, I could tell you no about this, and maybe I'm doing that, and you've come to conclusions.
Yeah.
You know, when we get a bit prim and proper, and when we see people, it's not necessarily about what's going on within that scene. It's to go, you've gotten to a certain point now, and you've lost the run of yourself. There is always a little bit of me in it, as there's a little bit of me in Billy and all of that. And
you, I suppose that's how you connect with the character.
Yeah,
too.
You'd be a fool to deny it, but I suppose I just let it run a little bit longer than I would. I'd like to think I'm at the very least.
You're a little bit more together.
Yeah, I'm not as rude, you know.
We all have those moments. Yeah. Now, going back to the endorsements, you did have a certain celebrity as well that was involved in encouraging getting this play to the stage. Tell people about this.
Oh, yeah, that was Bill Nighy, that beautiful gentleman. I did that film in Rome about the Homeless World Cup last year. I had a small part. There was some fantastic actors in it.
Referee.
But I was hanging around as a referee for a while. Slightly overweight referee, I might add. And so I ended up chatting to Bill at lunch, which was lovely, and he was sound, and he was like, Shane, you have to write that play. If you don't write that play, it's not going to happen.
That's spot on.
It was, yeah, in fairness, no, he was, Shane, you know. And he was so encouraging. It was lovely. And, Anna, it made up for lots of days when you're having an argument with somebody out on the road going, you did that differently last night.
Yeah.
And I was watching this man and it was like jazz, you know. He just go, I'm doing a scene now, I'm not doing the scene. And there was no difference. He was just so nice and encouraging. And yeah, so hopefully we'll get it to London at some stage.
Absolutely.
But that's my name drop and I'm only allowed one.
No, come here. You're able, as for as many as you want, I'm here for the name drop.
No, Tom Cruise told me never name drop.
No, you can have as many as you want on this show today.
He really was very kind and very encouraging. So that, I think that got me over the edge with it, really.
And there is an interesting and, I suppose, a unique way of performing this. Tell people about what happens on stage.
Oh, wow. Well, we're using kind of projections and stuff like that and voiceovers, and I'm doing voiceovers for the character.
They're very good.
That's it, I'm doing the voices. Now, I could have done an impression as well, Anna, of a lot of them, but we felt actually to bring the story forward. Mm-hmm. It would be too much of a distraction if I went off and did Richard Harris as a full thing rather than letting the scene run. So Terry Wogan is there and Phil Lynott is there and... But it's my interpretation of what the character thinks of those characters. Yeah. So I don't think I'm, you know, hopefully the Tin Lizzie fans will come in. But I'm not going to annoy them because it's my character's idea of what he is. And like, he was a beautiful man. There's no doubt about it. And a very, very talented man and a poet and a wordsmith and the whole lot. And these are maybe people that he's looking up to. And Richard Harris, for the bit of bowl that he had. Bold needs to be encouraged, I think, in this country. It used to be a bad thing for a while now, but the brave and the bold. And Richard Harris lived a life.
Yeah.
And we kind of envy that a little bit, you know, that male bravado and fighting and this and that. No, all I'm doing is playing racquetball with him around the streets of Limerick. Figure that one
See,
out.
I told you really are drawing people in.
But the man has two statues. That's the funny thing about it. He's got a statue in Kilkee as well. So Richard Harris has two statues, yeah. He was a racquetball champion or... What do they call it in Kilkee? Against the Wall, anyway. I should know because I wrote the play. But that's what we have. So it kind of turns into this kind of game of racquetball around the streets of Limerick at 4:30 in the morning. And Terry Wogan is keeping the score on the roof of St. Augustine. So.
Well, listening to it on the radio, it sounds brilliant. So I can't imagine what it's going to be like in person. Like, it's going to be very exciting because I can imagine you'll just bring it to life.
Oh, it's a bit mad, yeah.
Yeah, but people love that, though. Yeah. Bring me back, though, to young Shane starting out in theatre. What would he be saying to you now, looking at you now?
Oh, he'd be delighted. Young Shane was the guy in class who was making up stories and stuff. Like, you know, Anna, we can't all be good at sports. So I had to find my way. And I wasn't really the class clown either. But this woman came in and did workshops and acting classes for 50 pence at the time. And she said, "You're good. Would you come to a class?" And I walked into a class and there was 6 lads on one side of the room and there was 12 girls. And I was like, "That's all right." And we got to... make stuff up every week, and she wasn't putting me under pressure like school to learn poems or do Fesh Machu, and
Brilliant.
That has a place definitely. Mm-hmm. But I got the opportunity to just play and do plays and make stuff up, and it's been a big part of my life, and most of my friends are from films or shows or plays that I've done together.
Yeah.
And can you imagine what your life would be like if you didn't have sport?
And it's finding your place, isn't it?
Yeah, your people. And
yeah,
I do workshops in school and it's a big part of it, and go look for your tribe. Come on, guys, you know your interests. Go out there and find with them or connect with them online, because we can't all be into the same things.
Absolutely.
You know?
And the world would be very boring if you were. Talk to you a little bit about that. You have so many strings to your bow, you know, writer, actor, you know, you're into the bit of kickboxing as well, which I saw and I love.
Yeah.
But talk to me about the workshops with younger people in school, like, and what they're about and how it came about.
Again, Graffiti Theatre Company, years back with Emily Fitzgibbon and Geraldine O'Neill, came to me and said, "Would you be interested in doing these workshops and maybe writing a couple of your own personal stories?" And funnily enough, Dominic McHale, who plays the guard in The Young Offenders, he took the workshops on after me and he did them. But they were telling my stories. So I went back a few years ago to Graffiti and we did them again. And now I'm kind of running with them myself, and Graffiti have given them to me and they're very kind. So we're going to schools and it's about resilience and communication. And I've just found that it's amazing, but it keeps changing. It always keeps changing. And I found now we kind of have a middle ground where kids in we'll say, DESH schools or less well-off schools are quite open to asking for help if they need help.
That's brilliant.
So I tell stories and I say, "If your friend needs help, will you ask for help?" And they'll go, "Yeah." "Will you ask for help if you need help?" And the kids in the DESH schools will go, "Yeah." But we've got this middle ground that we're missing at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not really involved in education. I'm only telling my stories. And I'm not a mental health practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
But if those kids aren't asking for help, then we have a problem. And I think we need to get to them earlier. Mm.
And it's normalising it, isn't it? Asking for help. And sometimes it's about connecting through someone's life experience like yours and telling about the times that you did and didn't and what worked for you, you know, especially with kids. And, you know, look,
learn from my mistakes.
Yeah, and that's nice as well. I mean, it's vulnerable, but also it's real. I think kids are really intuitive like that, and they they smell the BS, whereas they also smell the honesty.
They know that when I go in, and the novelty wears off after half an hour of, oh, it's Billy Murphy.
I was just about to say, do they go in and say, it's Billy Murphy?
Yeah, if the teachers don't tell them, it's great. It's a bit of a shock tactic and they get a buzz off it. But then after a while they go, oh, hang on, he's telling something that's real.
Yeah.
And it's good. And I can kind of cover the more serious notes by going, right, this happened to me. How do we fix this? Go to somebody that you know. If you have a problem, go to somebody that you know, that you trust. We come up with the saying, don't go to the butcher for a haircut. If you had an issue with your back, you're not going to go to the dentist about it. You're going to go to physio, you're going to do this. And that sticks with them.
Yeah, but it should stick with adults as well. Like, I mean, that's a great message for people listening here as well today, because sometimes we don't ask for help. And look, we played Frank and Walters after all before you came in. I love that tune. Yeah. But it will forever be Billy Murphy's tune on the bus when he's getting everyone going. There is no escaping Billy Murphy. Like, what's it like for you getting the gang back together for series four?
That was the best thing ever, because
really?
We are like a family, and I mean that respect.
And all of the cast is back, which I always think is a great sign as well.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone was back in different capacities. Chris wasn't there as much as maybe we wanted him, or maybe, but the story was different, but he was back. There was a lot said about that. Oh, this, that. But if you watch through, no, he was there.
Yeah, he's there.
But the lads are my friends now.
Yeah.
Hillary is a friend of mine. Alex called to my house 2-3 weeks ago. I visit Chris in London, you know. I was with PJ this morning. Like, we are friends. Orla is a great friend
like
of mine.
Family.
And Orla's friends with your producer outside, and has been so encouraging me to go, no, you do your playing, you know. So we're all, again, you're on about BS. We can't do that to each other. Even Dominic's a great friend of mine as well. So Peter had a rule.
Oh, yeah.
No so-and-so's on set.
I love it.
And you probably experienced it in sport. Look around. If you don't see someone, the chances are it's you. And it tends to rein you in. It's been magic. And what it helps me do is then do my plays as well.
Yeah, because you all get to do your own thing and come back. And I would imagine then it re-energises everybody, because you've missed each other.
Completely. Like, COVID probably took the wind out of the sails a little bit, because we got delayed a little longer than we needed to.
Mm-hmm.
And the momentum was a little bit gone, and we couldn't go and do the press when it was out the last time. But I think it sustained people to go, right, we've got 2 seasons during COVID. They were on, but we couldn't really make any.
Yeah.
And then we wanted to go again. So I think there's life there still in it. And I've seen the cycle now. The kids are younger that are watching the show. They're 11 and 12 now.
Are they?
They are. And they were regularly shouting at me during the summer. So it's lovely. It's brilliant.
I'm going to ask what everyone else is thinking right now.
Yeah.
Seeing as I'm the voice for everybody listening. Will there be more series?
Well, my fingers are crossed anyway.
Mine too.
Because I got a mortgage and I have a new baby and I have a wife.
Oh, wow, congratulations.
Yeah, we're very happy, and it's I've gotten so much because of the young offenders as well.
Of course.
You know, so,
that work-life balance must be
at the moment
challenging. Does it exist even?
I have a saint living at home. I'm telling you that now, because I'm going out in the morning to rehearsals, and I have a saint living at home. I don't say it enough.
You've said it on national radio, so good on you.
I could be still a painter or a plumber, and there's still saints at home, trust me. But I'm going to work and I love my job.
Yeah.
I know my wife loves her job as well. So it's give and take, isn't it?
Of course it is. And there'll be times where you'll step back and you'll take another role, but I suppose you have to embrace what you have
now and
the opportunities that are there. That's amazing. Yeah. And of course, just for good measure, you're awarded Cork Person of the Month as well.
I know.
You know, no big deal.
I had Jangri, Cillian Murphy had the Oscar.
Cork's having a bit of a moment, isn't it?
And then the wife had the baby in February, so I kind of stuck a little sticker on the award saying, you know, it was her really on February. I'm very grateful. I'm sure you're aware, these are nice things to get.
Yeah.
But the reward is never where you think it's going to be, really, is it? It's like, nice one. We really enjoyed the game.
Tell me what has been a reward for you. What's been that moment where you've been like, wow, I'm proud of myself, or this is it?
I get emotional if I told you what they really were. Well, like, my mum...
This is an opportunity.
Yeah, a friend of my mum said she was lonely and she watched the show. So
that's incredible.
Sorry for cursing.
No, but that's,
you know what I mean?
That's what it's all about, though. Yeah. That's why you do what
it
you do.
It makes people happy, and I know people have tough things going on. So that's what it's about.
Yeah. And that's, I suppose, but that's what's real. But I know you probably didn't expect to be talking about this. You said at the start, we don't want to get heavy, but
no, yeah.
Isn't that incredible though? Yeah, that you that can is feel the reward, you have that impact.
Like, I thought it was, when you're younger, you think it's going to be like women and parties, like, you know what I mean? You think it's going to be the fall of Rome, like, you know, excess and all of that nonsense. It's not. It's being able to get a mortgage.
Yeah.
It's being able to get married or have a nice holiday and maybe have kids and stuff like that. And
share these incredible moments with them.
Yeah, and make people happy because you're doing something. At the end of the day, if we didn't have television and film and art and sport, it would have been a very tough COVID if we didn't have Netflix and if we didn't have films and stuff. And I'm really happy that everyone's doing, like, so many people. I'm proud of Aina Hardwick and Alison Oliver and the lad here from Dublin and so many actors, but the writers as well and the producers and, like, the lad that's doing Blue Lights in Belfast and Kin, the second season of Kin was amazing. And there's just more of that. Mm. And I get the opportunity to do those things or work on those things. It's just been really a blessing. So Ireland is in a really strong place in the arts at the moment, and long may it continue.
Absolutely.
And the sport, I want to say, has been very encouraging. Just seeing somebody being the chap that won in the swimming, being confident.
Yes, and owning it and giving himself permission.
And being lovely about it. I was going, let's not be apologising for being good about things anymore.
But sport and the arts, they lift people up. And I suppose, speaking of lifting people up, you know, because you have a knack for it.
Yeah.
Let's go back to your play now and we'll finish how we started. Like, how are you feeling about opening night?
Oh, I'm very nervous.
Are you?
Oh, yeah.
Are you
definitely
really?
Oh, yeah. Very, very nervous, but in a good way. Okay. If I wasn't, there would be a problem.
True.
I suppose the fact that I wrote the words should be an incentive not to worry about forgetting the words, but that's always going to be there.
Of course.
It's always my first thing and it's always been an issue with me, but...
Really?
Oh, yeah, it's like it's the number one thing. If I could get that out of the way, it's like, you know, I'll have to have a look at that some stage. But even the fact that I've written it, it's like, why isn't this going in or what isn't?
Mm.
But I need to know what I'm doing first before it can go in. It's like you going, if you're playing in a different position, you need to know what somebody wants from you. And that's kind of what it is. And now we've all strung it together. I've got a fantastic team. Cormac O'Connor has been very encouraging from day one. And Cormac worked on Disco Pigs years ago, but has been very, very supportive. Ruth Hayes did the play the last time, the radio play. And now we've got Brian Desmond on board as the director. He directed the last time. And you know what? The Tree Gang there and our stage manager, I know they're listening down in Cork and they're still working. We have a lovely woman who's keeping an eye on us, so it's not just the boys' club. I think people are going to have a good night out in Talla. If they come out to the Civic in Talla, they're going to have a good night.
There's no think about it. Because, as I said, I'm excited about it myself. I'm going to make sure my bum is on one of those seats because having listened to the radio play, I'm intrigued to see what you have in store for us on the stage. Shane Casey, thank you so much for taking the time and thank you for sharing today. And
thank
I loved the honesty and the vulnerability as well.
Thank you. Yeah, you nearly got me there.
I know you did a great job. The Man Who Talks to Statues. It's written and performed by the one and only Shane Casey. It comes to the Civic Theatre from the 5th to the 11th of September as part of the Dublin Fringe Festival. For more information, you can visit fringefest.com.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.